on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, September 15th, 2025. Edition, and I can feel it now. The fourth quarter is soon to be here. We have just a couple weeks left in this quarter, and then we're down into the home stretch of the year. And it's been a very interesting year, both economically and politically. And for many, it's been a surprising year. And so we are going to try to uncover the reasons why the market remains buoyant and teach you some lessons that you can take back to your own personal situation. And we do that by answering your finance and investment questions, as well as giving you perspective and data that matter, that are relevant to smart decision making. And that's what this hour will be dedicated to you and what's on your mind. And in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market activity and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, guys. Love your podcast. Listen to it every day. I've been following Chipotle Mexican Grill, symbol CMG, and I see it hit a 52-week low today. And I'm just wondering, is this a good time to buy it or should I stay away? Thank you.
All right, looking at Chipotle Mexican Grill, down 42% from its 52-week high, was around $66 and change. Now we're down at $38 and change. There was a recent split, so you might have heard it trading with hundreds of dollars recently, but there was a split. And since that split, it's been going down pretty consistently. No dividend here, and earnings are expected to be up 8% this year to $1.21 from $1.12 last year, and to $1.42 next year. And that sounds like pretty solid growth. However, the growth has slowed considerably. Actually, last quarter, earnings were down 3% year over year, and revenues were only up 3% year over year versus a year ago when earnings were up 36% and revenues were up 18%. So you saw that sharp deceleration. And really, the story here is multiple contraction. Whenever you have a name trading at elevated multiples, 40, 50 times earnings, a slowdown in growth is inevitably going to cause a multiple contraction in markets. And right now, the P ratio going forward is somewhere in the 30s, okay, low 30s based on this year's expected earnings. And that's pretty high for a pretty, what is now a relatively slow growth market. And that is the ultimate issue. That's the market. Slow growth, profit picture, shall we say. And if I bring up a chart of Chipotle, what you can see is there isn't really major support till about $35. So you're getting there. That's the positive here. You're getting there. It's after being down 42%, you're starting to enter some decent support levels. But it's also not trading cheap yet. Even if you go by next year's earnings, $1.42, you're in the high 20s on a multiple. And once again, isn't showing good profit growth. I know they've been pressured from input costs to their business, as well as labor costs. And I think that is certainly an issue. So between $35 and $37, that's probably the next major support level. But really, the ultimate support is around $30. So that's a 618 retrace from the lows back in 2018. So I would be very patient on this name. I would also want to see a high volume day or week to where, okay, everyone has just puked this name, right? They are tired of the downtrend. They're tired of the losses, and they just throw the baby out with the bathwater. And ultimately, that is a sign that the selling pressure is hitting a crescendo. And while you've seen a little bit of elevation in volume recently, it's not at a level that gets me excited about buying the name right now. So I'd be patient on it. I'd watch it because it is a good business, but I wouldn't be buying it, probably, frankly, from a valuation perspective, until $30. Thanks for the call. We have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about the AI job paradox and why AI isn't causing layoffs, but it's hiding hiring cuts. So we'll dig into that story and analyze a new Federal Reserve report that reveals how AI is quietly influencing hiring for jobs requiring a college degree, typically, and the difference between the service sector as well as the manufacturing sector. Okay, so we'll dig into that. We also have questions we have other topics on the docket as well. Let me pull that up here. One is in regards to a new trade on Wall Street. It's called running hot. And in many ways, I sympathize with the narrative that is being under-discussed. And I'll dig into that story and more, as well as how U.S. companies are putting the brakes on hiring because of tariffs, what industries are really suffering and are ultimately having those layoffs. So we'll dig into all of that and more here for this next 45 minutes or so. We also have voice bank questions. One is on cash allocation and the other is on the Vanguard Total World Stock Market Index Fund, ETF, which is VT. And then we have some questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. But we're going to head to a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk Voice Bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. But hang on, because I'm going to talk about today's market activity in the next segment.
Get ready for an all-new Invest Talk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7. How to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are going to help you move past the familiar names to identify the key opportunities for investment in the real AI revolution. They'll be talking about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com. There's value in every InvestTalk podcast, so call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Did you know a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? As soon as you try the True Age plus True Health test by True Diagnostic, it will show you things you've never learned from a standard doctor's visit or your annual physical. The True Age plus True Health test is a simple at-home kit that gives you powerful insights so you can feel better longer. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. TrueAge measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number. It shows you how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations that will give you the largest bang for buck improvements to your health and to slow down aging. It's all done at home with just a quick, painless finger prick. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
All right, let's go take a look at the market today. And it was another positive day overall in markets. And if you take a look at, let me pull up the data here. If you look at the broad S&P, that was up about a little less than 0.5%, 31 points on the day. And if you look at the NASDAQ, you had that up nearly 1%, really driven by Tesla. And that was the rumor that Elon was putting $1 billion into Tesla stock. Google also was the driver, up 4.5% on the day. NVIDIA was flat, Apple up 1%, same with Broadcom, Microsoft, Meta, Amazon. Those are up about 1.5% on the day. You did see weakness in healthcare once again. You had names like Intuitive Surgical down 3.5%, Boston Scientific down 2.7%. You had Consumer Staples down as well. Philip Morris down 2.7%, Pepsi down 2% on the day. Energy was roughly flat. Industrials also had a pretty solid day overall. The banks were, or the finance sector were pretty mixed. You had JP Morgan up 0.5%, but names like Schwab down 1.5%, Progressive down over 1%. And then some of the private equity names, KKR was up. That was solid. Blackstone up. So you saw some strength there. The rest of the big banks were roughly flat. So pretty mixed picture on the finance front. So while the market was strong on the indices, you really had you didn't have great breadth. It was, you saw some deeply red sectors as well as some nicely green sectors. So pretty interesting to note. We do have the Fed meeting coming up here on Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday, which we will get a rate cut. That is almost sure. But if you look at the odds of a 50 basis point cut, that is still sitting around 4%. So pretty low odds that we'll get something like 25 basis points. When it comes to the rest of the market, you see treasuries were a bit stronger across the curve, yields down 1 or 2 basis points. No big move there. Dollar index was down 0.2%. Gold finished up once again, nearly 1% on the day, above $3,700 for the first time ever. Bitcoin futures were down 1.3%, and WTI was up 1% on the oil price. That was the market today for September 15th. 2025. Now, every day we receive questions from the comments section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. So here's one that came in earlier. Love this take. Have another one for you. I'm trying to increase healthcare exposure in my Roth for long term. Is Merck a good buy and hold at the current levels? MRK is the symbol. Let's pull up the data here. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see this. But Merck, one of the largest pharma names out there, that has been in a very strong downtrend over the past year or so. 52-week high was $219. But if you look all the way back into early 2024, it did peak out around $133. Now we're down to $81 and change at the close today. Relative strength is 15, not great. And you're starting to see earnings decline, down 7% year over year last quarter. Revenues down 2%. And you would say that, you know, this is no big deal. This is, it's in a downtrend for really no reason. And you get a 4% yield. The forward PE is in single digits, which would be very cheap. What bothers me, though, is the technicals are not lining up here. If you are going to get a true rally in this name, you would want to see more technical validation. This recently rallied from a low in May around $73, hit the 200-day moving average, and has just rolled back over. And the healthcare space in general has certainly struggled, and this is not really any different. So my problem is, while the valuations look cheap, I'm not convinced on the chart that this is going to turn around anytime. When I say time, in the near term, okay? Because you're getting that technical weakness. They do have some debt, but not a dramatic amount. That's a positive here. Their enterprise value to EBITDA is right around 8.7, which historically is the low end of the range. So from a valuation perspective, you like this 35% return on equity, all of that. Once again, I still don't see a technical picture that lines up to strength in the short to medium term. So I would continue to watch it. There's a lot of late stage drugs that are expected to be approved. Maybe if they do, then this will rebound. But the market is telling you that it's maybe unlikely to do so. So that's why I would pass on it. And yeah, I would definitely pass. He also asked whether I like more than a UNH or an Eli Lilly or a Novo Nordisk. I would probably, if I'm looking at some of the other names that you listed, we've looked at Novo Nordisk, and I think fundamentally that looks a bit better, even though technically the reason we didn't buy it was the technicals, that they haven't improved, but they do look a bit better than Merck. And so if I'm picking one of any of these, I'd be picking Novo Nordisk. Now we're moving to a break, still to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call right now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
Now let's go take a look at our main focus point for the day, and that is in regards to the AI job paradox and the fact that businesses are both laying off and hiring people because of AI. And this is a report from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And they talk about the concerns that AI have sparked that the technology will replace jobs and reduce hiring. And what they looked at, and they surveyed many different companies, especially in the Northeast, and they said that business reported a notable increase in AI use over the past year, but very few firms reported AI-driven layoffs. Okay, what it basically said was that those already employed are likely to simply be retrained in AI than laid off, and that recruiting overall is being scaled back due to AI, and some firms adding workers proficient in the use of AI. Now, what's even more interesting is that it depended on what type of company you're talking about. Now, 40% of service firms reported using AI this year. That's up from 25% last year, and 44% expect to use AI over the next 6 months. So it is growing, especially in the service sector. But on the manufacturer side, there was a large jump, but it's still only to 26% from 16% last year. And about a third expect to use AI over the next 6 months. So it's growing, but not as fast as the service sector. Now, what subsectors used it the most? Well, over half of firms in the information, finance, and professional business service sectors reported using AI as a part of their business process. And this kind of ties to something we're going to speak about at our webinar later this month on the 30th, 15 days from now. And that is not just what companies are helping build out the AI infrastructure, but what also companies are going to benefit from utilizing AI. And this is their first kind of hint at that. It's the service sector and a lot of the subsectors. And we're in this space, right? We're in the finance industry. We are using AI extensively for a lot of business processes. And then you look on the flip side, no firms in the agriculture space are using AI. So once again, some firms are going to benefit drastically from higher efficiency, others, none at all. Now, 40 to 45% of firms in the wholesale and leisure hospitality sectors are using it. And about a third of firms in education and healthcare, personal services, and the retail sector. So once again, some none at all, some a little bit, some extensively. And when it comes to those that are paying for it, about half of service firms are now paying for AI tools in some capacity. That's up from 16 percentage points from last year. Now, what's interesting on the job front is what sectors are laying off, what are simply retraining, hiring, or hiring fewer. So far this year, service firms barely laid off any workers because of AI. But about 10 to 12%, actually 13%, of service firms anticipate layoffs over the next 6 months. And that's about even to how many people hired fewer, or how many companies hired fewer. But about 35% are going to have retrained workers this year to use AI. And nearly 50% next year expect to retrain workers. And that's the same on the manufacturing side. They expect to retrain workers. And the manufacturing side, nearly 15% of those firms think they will hire more next year. And about 13% of workers, 30% of workers on the service side or companies on the service side expect to hire more. And that's what's interesting here, is everyone's focusing on the jobs that are being replaced or the hiring less. And the reality here is it's a lot more complex than that. And they're seeing that the reduction in hiring due to AI was concentrated among jobs that require a college degree. So that's probably why you're seeing youth unemployment rise so significantly, especially those that are leaving college over the past couple of years. So the suggestion is that the effect of AI on individual firms is simply complex. And AI is creating job opportunities for those that know how to use it effectively, while other firms are simply hiring less. But most are actually retraining their current workers. So don't think that this AI is the real driver here of a weak jobs market. More likely, it's actually immigration policy. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. The millionaire mindset. Successful individuals have a perspective that sees money as a tool for unlocking opportunities and building sustainable long-term wealth. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now on Invest Talk at 888-99-SHARP. Have you ever had a breakthrough moment working on something that wouldn't let you stop thinking until you got to the bottom of it? I bet you've experienced that situation more than once. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. Claude's internal and external research capabilities go way deeper than basic web search. Think comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations for clients, turning hours of research into minutes. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Join Justin and Luke as they talk about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, September 30th, 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Online seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Ben in Minneapolis, and I just have a question regarding my portfolio in my Roth IRA. I currently am a new investor and was looking for, you know, as much exposure as I can get invested in VTI and VXUS to get some domestic and international exposure. I don't really keep up with my investments that much, and I was wondering if it's more worth it just to put all of it into Total World, like VT instead, just because I don't really keep up with balancing the two every year. And if so, should I just sell all my shares in both those and put it all into VT, or should I dollar cost average into that slowly over time? I will look for your answer on the podcast. Thank you.
All right. Now looking at VXUS, VTI, and VT. These are all Vanguard funds. So VTI is the domestic all stock index. VXUS is the international index. And then the Vanguard Total World Stock Market ETF is VT. And VT is a mix of those first two. It's about 63% U.S. equities and 36% foreign equities. And I kind of like that breakdown a bit better. Now, I don't know what your weighting is with VXUS versus VTI if you have more than 36% in VXUS, then this would be lowering your foreign exposure. I'd rather up your foreign exposure. I would imagine it might be less than 36%. I do like having kind of simplified version of this and the ability to rebalance. So they'll be rebalanced for you. So I do like the VT and I would do that. I wouldn't be coy about it. I'd just sell the other two and then just buy this one, VT, which is the Vanguard Total World Stock ETF. Thanks for the call. Now let's go answer two in a row right now.
Hi, guys. This is Eric from New York calling. Thanks for all your advice over the years. It really helped me on my investment journey. I have a quick question regarding allocation of cash in your portfolio. As we enter into the typically more volatile September Q4 period of the year, I'm trying to free up a little bit of cash so that way I can take advantage of any dips take place during this time. I'm wondering what your suggested allocation would be for maybe an expected volatile period, or what would be your cash allocation in your portfolio for a non-volatile period. Thanks very much for your advice, and I'll listen back on the podcast.
All right, looking at the potential for market volatility over the next few months, and I would say I wouldn't get too cute with it. I don't think you need to have much cash right now at all. Do I expect the market to pull back a little bit? Sure. But I think it's going to be relatively minor whenever that happens. Maybe the catalyst is the Fed meeting that isn't as dovish as the market was expecting, et cetera. It's hard to know the exact catalyst. But, you know, this is a time, September, early October, where things can get a little squirrely. Now, so far in the August-September period, we haven't had much volatility really at all. And so the backdrop of liquidity in the market is still relatively robust. And that means pullbacks should be bought. Pullbacks are likely to be minor. they're not going to be a major move to the downside in all likelihood. And so as you get into the holiday season of the fourth quarter, you know, things get definitely relatively bullish. You have the Santa Claus rally, you have the options market that kind of will drive things into the end of the year if we have a positive year. And so far, you know, we are positive, you know, low double digits for the S&P. And that certainly can continue once again through the end of the year. So I don't expect a major market drop probably until bare minimum back half, say second quarter of next year, probably later. To be honest with you, a lot does depend on the liquidity dynamics, but they aren't expected to really turn for at least a quarter or two. So I wouldn't be having an elevated level of cash. Could you rebalance and raise a little bit, you know, 3%, 5%, 7% of the portfolio? Sure. But this wouldn't be a double digit cash allocation in this market, considering the liquidity backdrop that we remain in, which is overall positive. Now let's pivot and talk about something similar, which is the new trade and the reason why the market just kind of continues to power higher. And that's what we call run it hot. And it's betting on not a recession, but an economic resurgence. And frankly, I have a lot of sympathy for this. While I do think we're in the latter innings of the growth phase, the rate cutting cycle that we are headed towards is likely to precipitate a increase in the yield curve and incentivize banks to lend more. And that typically is the end of the economic cycle. When you've already had growth and you get that last burst of bank lending to create liquidity and money in the system, that can keep economic growth going for a little bit longer. Now, the thinking here is not just that it's interest rates falling, but also you have the new tax bill that keeps everything kind of in place and could also fuel the next round of growth. So even though the labor market is weakening, the expectation is that it's only at the margins. And that layoffs aren't really happening in earnest. That the weakness in the labor market has more to do with the immigration policy right now, right? Lack of labor supply that is kind of zapping the hiring process. Now, a lot of people expect tariffs to be a tax on real incomes, and overall, they are. But mostly traders are shrugging off those concerns, embracing the idea that lower rates and a continuation of government spending will continue to boost corporate profits. And once again, I have a lot of sympathy for that. And that's why I don't think that we are in a period where there's going to be a major market setback in the short term. Now, I think the biggest argument for the economy weakening to some degree, or liquidity weakening, let's say that, is actually the effect on fiscal policy that a rate cut will have. What I mean by that is that if rates drop, that's less money from the government spending on interest payments, which sounds good in aggregate in the long term, but in the near term, it is less money going into people's pockets, right? Less money they're earning on CDs, savings accounts, treasuries, etc. So to me, that is the biggest argument. But what you see right now is that this rate cutting cycle could be relatively slow. There's still some level of interest not going back to zero interest rates, right? We might go from 4 to 3.5 or 3, but they're still well off the zero bound. So I think that impact will be relatively minor compared to the incentives that a steeper yield curve will have for banks. And then on top of that, you have the AI investment boom that continues. That's really driving a lot of the CapEx spending out of corporate America and perpetuating a consumer that continues to book air travel, go out to restaurants, all of that data remains solid. So it's important to not get so caught up in one particular narrative that, oh, the labor market shows weakness, that that automatically means a recession. It can mean many things. And it can mean not a lot. You know, I think of it as this way. If you have a job, you have a certain level of spending habits. If you don't have a job, you also have a certain level of spending habits. And so if the hiring situation is relatively meager, well, yes, that's zapping maybe the growth potential from the labor market that would feed into the consumer market. But when you're not getting also a requisite number of layoffs, well, that's also keeping those people who have jobs and their spending habits in place as well. So you have a more stagnant economic environment than a recessionary one. And then once again, a Fed cutting cycle could precipitate and likely will precipitate a growth in lending and thus liquidity. So overall, I have sympathy with this trade, even though it's not guaranteed. And this is one of those things where you have to have a balanced approach to the way you look at markets and economic data. Let's go with another YouTube comment question. Jim Lay says, MORN just hit a 52-week low. Do you think now would be a good time to pick it up? Well, you probably know that when things hit a 52-week low, well, that's probably not a wonderful sign for the business. And it's down 32% from its 52-week high. It peaked out at $365 per share. Now we're at $246. Now, why is this? Well, I think it's because of AI and the potential for, you know, Morningstar. We use Morningstar. They have a lot of good data, a lot of good analysis. But if you're able to use AI to pull data, maybe you need Morningstar a bit less, and revenues have started to slow as well as earnings. So earnings last year were up 54% to $7.88. But this year, earnings are expected to be up 18% to $9.30. But those estimates continue to come down because last quarter, revenue only grew 6% and profits only grew 19% versus 56% the year before. And then next year, earnings are supposed to be up 15%. But once again, those estimates continue to come down as well. And this was trading at a pretty high multiple in the 30s. I think it even reached the 40s for a little bit. And now we're back down to the high 20s. And if you go based on forward-looking earnings, which once again continue to get ratcheted down, that is now in the mid-20s. So if you're getting a kind of broader economy growth, you're going to pay broader market multiples, which would be closer to 20 times. And so I think there's more downside to go, and I'd be very patient with Morningstar, even though we use it. I do see some potential AI disruption. You are seeing short interest rise for this name, and I think that could continue for the foreseeable future. Let me give you a support level on this name. You know, we are getting the support around 240. But frankly, I wouldn't be buying it at least until about 220. That's where the major support is and would be right around that market multiple. So I think that's the level to take a look at it. But I also, once again, want to see a spike in volume that tells me capitulation is here, that everyone is throwing this name out or tired of the losses. And you could then see a resumption of a potential bull market in this name. But for now, I would stay away from it because it's not cheap enough and it remains in a very, very strong downtrend. Now let's swing back to the Vestock Voice Bank for a call that came in earlier.
Hi there, Justin. Luke, longtime caller here from the Midwest. Love the show. Thank you for everything you teach us on and educate us on. I have a quick question for you. Looking for a good stock to buy right now that hopefully would return me some gains over the next few years and that. I was wondering what you thought about getting into, I believe it's ticker symbol SFM, Sprouts Farmers Market. I've heard you talk about it a few times on your show, and I think you guys might own it, or you did at one time. What do you think of it? Will it make any money in the future here, do you think? Would it be something good right now to get into, or should I just pass on it and keep it on my watch list for future time down the road? Thank you for all your help. I appreciate it. Look forward to hearing your answer. Have a good day.
Well, we have owned Sprouts for clients for some time. We bought it in the 20s, I believe. Now it's at 128. So this has been one of our big winners over the past 5-6 years or so. And we did trim it recently, I believe in the 150s, 160 range. It peaked out around 180. And it is now in a bit of a downtrend. But to us, this is a corrective period. And we expect it to find support around the 120, 117 range. And that's where we would be aggressively picking it back up, maybe an upper allocation, because we really like the name overall. What they do is they have a 440 different stores in 24 states offering natural and organic foods. So we saw that trend that we think will continue for. It's a secular trend. People are more and more health conscious and looking for organic and natural foods that Sprouts offers. And I think there's a lot of runway for their growth. 42% growth this year, 18% or 15% expected growth next year. But it is trading at a little bit elevated multiple. And so once again, 120, 117, that's the range I'd be buying Sprouts. We're heading to a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Tammy. I'm calling from Spokane, Washington. It's been about 6 years since I've called in. You may have covered it, but I am curious about Lululemon. I invested in it, I think, back in 2017. I loved the product. I never felt like I could afford it, but I thought it was a great product. I had to sell the stock because I needed to liquidate some, and I hadn't paid attention for a long time. It ran up a long ways, really far, and now it's crashing, and I keep hearing news about it. I had kicked myself for selling it. I still think it is an amazing product. As a person that wears athletic wear, it's really high quality, and I love it. So I am just curious if you could explain what happened to Lululemon. I still really believe in the product. I was hoping you could explain what happened to it. I would still like to invest in it. And I was wondering if there was a way to look at where a price point would be to get back in. Thank you.
All right. Looking at Lululemon, and this is interesting because you ask what happened to it. I think it's pretty simple. This is what happened. This is what you have to worry about with any market leader in any industry, and this is what it comes down to, the economic moat a company can build, especially when things are going right. Can they prevent competitors from coming in and stealing their market share, stealing their thunder? And the reality here is that while Lululemon was the kind of the first big athleisure wear company to really crush it, right? Other names have slowly started to encroach on their business. And I think of Aloe is probably the main one. You have others like Vuori. There's one, Athleta, which is owned by Gap. So there are many now that are attempting to steal their market share, and many have succeeded in some ways. And you see that in last quarter, revenue growth was only up 7%. Earnings were down 2%. And earnings this year expect to be down 12% and then flat next year. So you've sapped all the growth here. And if you look at their cash flow, it has slowly slipped as well. Now, it's starting to become a pretty strong value. Enterprise value to EBIT is around 6.5. That is the lowest, really, it's close to ever been since 2009. It was at 2.3, which is in the depth of the recession. But outside of recession, this is as low as really it's ever been. Return on equity is still 42%, still very high, very little debt on its balance sheet, which you have to like as well. And so I think we are getting levels that are very attractive for Lululemon, but it's not without its risk because of the encroachment by those other brands on their market share. There is some major support around $135 in that range. We're still at $151 at the close today. Okay. So it still has, $160 at the close today. So it still has some more downside potential due to its momentum. But let me look at the volume as of late. I like to always take, it did have on that earnings, it did have pretty high volume. It's not been followed up by major volume, so that's of note to me. It's not fully reversing, but I do think from a valuation perspective, we're there. I don't think the brand is going anywhere. I still think it's going to have its loyal customers. You sound like one of them. And I think it's going to maintain its pretty strong cash flow. Its balance sheet doesn't need to go anywhere. It's going to remain strong. They're buying back shares. Obviously, as prices decline, that cash flow can buy back even more shares. So I am starting to believe it is a good value here, but understand that there is some more downside potential in the near term. It's always hard to pick that bottom when it's in a strong downturn. And therefore, you have to understand that. You have to be okay with a little short-term volatility. Because I do think medium to long term, this is a pretty good level to be buying Lululemon. L-U-L-U is the symbol. Now, lastly, let's talk about the labor market and the fact that sectors like manufacturing, wholesale retail, and energy have experienced a wave of job losses recently. And mainly that is due to the tariffs. Manufacturing shed 12,000 jobs. We've lost a total of 78,000 manufacturing jobs this year. The mining sector, which includes oil and gas, lost 6,000 jobs in August, and wholesale trade fell by 32,000 jobs total this year. Companies like John Deere, they laid off 238 workers across factories in Illinois as its net income fell 26% in the third quarter. So it's very interesting to see where the job losses are concentrated. You're seeing construction, financial services, even information. So the tech sector is laying off workers, manufacturing once again, leisure hospitality has been a strength, to be honest with you, but mining and lodging has been weak as well as wholesale trade. That's where the job losses have been so far in 2025. We're heading into the end. This is the end of today's show. I'm Justin Klein. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, and you get your podcast anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or over on our YouTube channel as well. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.